Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. Our guests on today's podcast are my friends Ann and Bridget Pack. They have been married 19 years. Ann Pack is a transgender woman, and what that means is she has transitioned from male to female. That happened after 14 years of marriage. And they will both jointly share the story of Anne coming to terms with her gender identity and then transitioning from male to female. And they will talk about that. Their assumption was that their marriage would be over, but they have felt impressed to keep this marriage going. They're in the middle of their story. They don't know how this story ends, but they're brave enough to share this story. This is a podcast that's helpful to understand God's transgender children is jointly shared by Bridget, who has wonderful insights as a cisgender person, with Ann Pack, a transgender woman. And they both share that story that's helpful for our listeners. It also provides helpful insights to parents and local leaders how to better understand God's LGBTQ children. They've been married 19 years, as I mentioned. They also are active in the church. Bridget has always been active in the church and remains a strong member of the church, and at some point stepped away. And she'll talk about that, but she'll also talk about now re-engaging with the church and why she loves the church, and it helps her come to close to God and to his son. So they will jointly share their journey with our restored church. They will also talk about Affirmation and North Star and the roles of those two wonderful organizations for God's LGBTQ children. Bridget Pack has now been elected to the chair of the board of North Star, and she started that assignment in June of 2018. So Bridget is the first person we've had on a podcast specifically talking about North Star and its important role for LGBTQ members. Anne will likewise share her thoughts about Affirmation and its important role for LGBTQ members. And I think it's wonderful for our listeners to learn more about these organizations. So thank you for joining us for this podcast. Welcome, Anne and Bridget. We're glad to have both of you here. And we started with a prayer. And as we prayed, we all three felt the Spirit. And our goal in this podcast is to help you, our listeners, better understand a transgender person's story, in this case, Anne's story, and have Bridget, her wife, share her perspective as part of the story. They're sharing this story together. And the purpose of doing that is to help all of us understand Heavenly Father's transgender children so we can understand their stories and how to respect, honor, and support them in this very unique journey. So with that starting, let's talk about when you met. You've been married 19 years.
Wow.
And yeah. You have a daughter that's how old?
She is 14.
Well, she's 13 today, but she will turn 14 shortly.
In a few days. So, yeah.
So that is great. Congratulations on being 1 year done with having a teenager.
Oh, it has been a trial, that's for sure. I now understand when people talk about the teen years.
So my wife and I haven't figured that out yet. So it doesn't help just having lots of them. But I bet you're doing a good job. But tell us how you met.
Well, I was recently returned home from a mission. And all of my friends were either married or still on their missions. And I didn't know where to go to date or, make friends or. So this is back before online dating, and it's kind of embarrassing, but it is what it is. We met through a phone dating, telephone dating.
It's true.
Line. And back then it was a little weird. You'd call up and listen to people's profiles about themselves, and I heard Bridget's, and she sounded amazing, just what I was looking for, and I left a message for her, and she got back to me.
So that's pre-dating app, but using some level of technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cool.
Very low-level technology, telephone.
And where were you both living at this point?
I was living at home with my parents mm-hmm. in Fruit Heights. Mm-hmm. Those who don't know where Fruit Heights, it's kind of by Lagoon, Cherry mm-hmm. Hill area.
And I had gone to my high school years in California, and right after graduation had moved here to like a 6 to 9 month period to help a friend who had a gym here. And I ended up staying longer than I planned, but still I was scheduled to go back to California 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after I met Rye. And so I actually ended up staying. And we met, and I had a great experience. I had a roommate at the time who wanted to do this phone dating app. And so I actually signed up with her, and I thought it was the silliest thing. I ended up going, I think, on only a couple dates, and Anne was one of those. And it turned out that I ended up staying and never going back. So I lived in Bountiful at the time
wow.
when we met.
So Bridget sometimes goes back and forth between referring to me as Anne or Rye.
Yeah, help our listeners understand that.
So my birth name or my male name is Ryan, and I prefer Anne. Bridget, you know, she's known me forever as Ryan. So, you know, it depends on the situation. I know she tries to call me Anne, but sometimes Rye just... Well, slips in there.
And a quick summary. So we've known each other 20 years. In next month, we'll have been married 19. And Anne didn't come forward as transgender until we'd been married 15 years. So after you have that many years of calling somebody Ryan and he, it is a really hard swap in your mind. A lot of people say just yank the Band-Aid and do it. But ours was elevated in difficulty because when we told our daughter, we asked her, and we, of course, let her know that her comfort and understanding was first and foremost, and what she wanted was what was most important. And she asked that she didn't mind everyone else using Anne and everyone else using she, but it was really important that for me, she wanted me to say Ryan, Daddy, and he. So at home, we live our lives. I say Ryan, or I try to say Rye just because it's a little less gendered. Mm-hmm. And I say he at home. And then we go out and about, and to properly respect Anne's gender, I try to say Anne and she. And it's really tricky in my mind. It usually takes me a little bit to switch. So I apologize ahead of time for anyone that I, or any time that I say the wrong pronoun. I'm trying.
And I just sense kindness between the two of you. There's no owner's manual. There's no roadmap. I don't know of any other couples on the road you are. And so I sense a great deal of trying to understand and support and empathize and at times share frustrations or ways that we can all do better in our marriages. So yeah. I think that's a wonderful example that for our listeners is just the name and how you're navigating that in your own family and how you involve your daughter mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and sort of put some of her wishes first and then how you're honoring it in other areas.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's helpful for our listeners to know you were married for obviously 19 years, 15 years. You know, you were male. I don't know, you know, our listeners like me sometimes don't know the right words to use, but at some point you came to terms with your gender orientation being female.
Right.
And probably a better term is gender identity being female. So walk our listeners through that.
Well, for me, most of my life, I tried to do what other people expected of me. I didn't want to stand out. I wanted to do everything I was told and asked of. And really, I didn't want to be the person who was different, the person who, you know, shook up everything. I wanted to just fall in line and do what everybody else was doing at church, at home. And so I remember, you know, all throughout childhood and teenage years fighting against this feeling and you know, oh, if I was only a little bit more righteous, or oh, if I was, you know, did everything I could that was, you know, masculine, maybe, you know, something would happen and I would feel comfortable in my gender. And that never happened. And so eventually I kind of had the decision, well, do I just stick out life and be miserable, or do I take a, you know, decide to, you know, take my life? That definitely sounded pretty nice at that mm-hmm. time. And so those were my kind of my options, and those weren't good options for me. I didn't like either of them. Mm-hmm. So it kind of came down to, well, maybe I should try accepting myself for who I am. And I had never tried that before. And ever since then, it's kind of felt like, yes, this is the road I'm supposed to take. This is, you know, the path I'm supposed to be on. And all my life trying to force this puzzle piece in where I've, you know, everybody else says that's where the puzzle piece goes. Well, wait a minute. It's not going in. Suddenly everything just clicked and just went right in. And I've never felt closer to the Lord, never felt closer to God and clearer in what I'm doing than I do now.
Well, and I'm going to slow you down a little bit because you're speaking from today.
I am speaking
so
from today.
So throughout
they
our marriage...
They make a good team, don't they, our listeners, the two of them together?
throughout our marriage, there was a lot of things that would happen, and I traveled a lot for work. And during that period of time, obviously, it gave Anne the opportunity to present and try on women's clothes, and especially my clothes. I didn't know that at the time.
That's
and
all I had.
To kind of see what was going on, is this something that's maybe a fetish, or is this something that really isn't, is could go away or could be resolved, or could I go to a therapist and get it resolved? And obviously the answer kept coming back as no. And when I kind of learned of that, I think even at the first time, we'd been married about 8 years at the time, and it was, you know, completely shocking to me. And I think I did what most conservative people would do, which is trying to find there must be a reason. I went through everything. It must be psychological and emotional relationships with family. And I went through all of those normal processes, and we kept trying to deal with it and put it away. And there was a point, I think we'd been married about 10 years, where I remember Anne took off the garments and my life was shattered. I all of a sudden, this picture perfect of trying to keep everything on the outside looking like it should, had to change. All of a sudden now my spouse wants nothing to do with the church. And even if we talk about God, just absolutely loses control with this anger that just overcomes them. And it was becoming this place that I didn't want to be and didn't really even know how to navigate. And so I thought, well, my spouse is going to go through an experience that they need to do with their testimony. And I'm going to go to church every week, and I'm going to keep doing what I'm going to do with my daughter. And a couple years, so about 10 years in, I came home and I learned that Anne had a secret stash of female clothing that I was unaware of. And at that time, we really had not been talking about it. It was kind of something that was not discussed. I knew that something was wrong, but we didn't discuss it. And at that point, we realized it's not going away. We have to discuss it. So I found a therapist and we started going together to try to figure out what it was. And that was the first time, at least for me, I had ever even heard the word transgender. When we were talking about all of the variations of gray that fall under the transgender umbrella, the therapist said to me, it's a bell curve. You know, no one's 100% this, 100% that. No one's 100%, you know, straight. No one's 100% gay. There's all of these things fall on a bell curve, and there could be variations. That was absolutely mind-blowing for me. I never had thought of that. And to be transgender even means somebody could be a cross-dresser. Somebody could be somebody who maybe feels a little off in their gender identity from their biologically born sex, but they're okay with it. And there's other people who... they just can't even fathom living another day in life being seen as the inappropriate gender. There's other people who have genders that kind of are fluid and move back and forth. And I had never heard any of that. Like, I still to this day laugh. I mean, 10 years later, and I'm still learning about this, but that was the first point. And we started going to a support group that was for, they called it the Intersex Support Group of Utah. So it was all variations of people that didn't fit in the binary sex defined by birth. And there was some very interesting personalities, but there was a few common messages we both took away from these support groups. Mm-hmm. One was that you were going to be miserable the rest of your life, unhappy, sad, depressed, probably suicidal, and maybe even follow through. Two was you were surely going to have a life of drugs, alcohol, sex, rock, and all the other stuff. It was not going to be a very clean life. You were going to not be able to stay married, and you were going to really struggle in relationships in the future. And there's no way you could have a relationship with God. God's cursed you. God's done this to you. Everyone was very bitter and angry against God.
If he
exists, you're right.
Yeah.
And I remember driving home from that very first support group, and I remember just bawling and saying, okay, that's really scary. So what are you? Tell me what you are. And Anne was so terrified of what the experience was, as well as terrified knowing what it could mean for me, that Anne promised me in that car. It was just cross-dressing. Anne just liked women's clothes. And I said, that's the scariest thing I'll ever think of in my life. I can't believe my husband's a cross-dresser, but this is it, and it'll never get any worse than this. And I'm going to try to find a way to accept this as long as it's between us. At home, no one will ever know. That was a long time ago. And we laugh about that because that's the point when the word transgender became the scariest possible word we could ever whisper to each other, even.
It was very scary to admit that that's what because of what that word meant to us.
Mm-hmm. And it took you another 5 years to find a way to, in fact, the way you did it was you sent me a text at work that Anne was going to go and pierce ears and then turned off your phone so I couldn't respond, because piercing of someone's ears is an outward sign, right? It's something that people can now see. And up until this point, it was always, like we said, quiet, closed, behind closed doors. No one knew. So Anne said, I know you're going to be mad, but I'm going to go pierce my ears at my lunch break and I'll be home after. And I'll come and get my stuff because we're going to get divorced.
I was going to come and get my bag and I was going to leave.
Because Anne was sure the idea that it was going to be, it could be transgender meant we were going to get divorced. There was no way around it. Mm-hmm. And so when Anne came home that day, we met in the garage. We weren't, didn't want to go inside because we knew our daughter would hear us. And we were both hysterically bawling. And I remember saying to Anne, I know this means we're going to get divorced. I know that's what it means, but you're obviously very depressed and suicidal as well. I can't let you go in this state. So you need to come inside. We're going to take the next 30 to 60 days, get you on medication, get you a therapist, and then I'm going to find a way in that period of time to let you go and we'll get divorced. And that's kind of the first state that we hit with the whole transgender thing. It was certain doom that this is what. We admitted transgender and it meant the next step was divorce.
That was 5 years ago.
That's five years ago? Yeah.
Sounds like about 5 years ago, the assumption in that garage is that your marriage is going to end, because that's what you've seen all transgender couples, when one identifies as transgender, is the marriage is over. And
because nobody sticks together. And if they do, they're, well, the cis spouse, non-transgendered spouse, must be lesbian if they do stick together. We didn't have anybody that we knew of that would stay together through this.
Because when I heard you two speak at Affirmation earlier this year, that was one of the unique parts of your stories where you said, why do we have to end this marriage? Mm-hmm. Even though we know no couples that are walking the road, we're considering, why does this marriage have to end? And why can't we consider walking this road as a married couple? It was a really unique, beautiful experience for me. So walk our listeners through how you kind of opened that door that, this is more than just we're going to spend 30 to 60 days in transition. That's an interesting word to use.
Yeah.
As you transition out of a marriage, we should find a different word. As you're transitioning.
Right, right.
Help us understand.
And nothing was overnight, even just, you know, going back to embracing, you know, accepting who I am. That did not happen overnight. It was years and years and years of...
Yeah, and I think that's something that's important for our listeners that we haven't spent a lot of time in this podcast is, and I've talked with you before, Anne, and I've heard you speak, and with my other transgender friends, is this is not sort of a knee-jerk reaction to one certain event or any certain events. This is a lifelong coming to terms with your gender identity that you have examples of this as a young child.
Yeah.
And so we could spend, I think, the whole podcast helping our listeners understand this is just a...
It's lifetime of agonizing over what to do with, you know, how I feel and my place in the world and how I view that.
And I'm sure many people think, you know, my feeling is this is not rebellion. This is not desire to turn away from God. This is no desire not to keep the commandments or enter in some sort of different relationship, because obviously you're still in this marriage, but it's the only way that you know how to survive is to overcome this gender dysphoria by presenting yourself as female, because that's how you feel between your ears, your brain, you are female. And so presenting yourself as female, and I wish our listeners could sit across the table from you, because you are female, you look female, you know?
Well, thank you.
But help our listener. I mean, so talk about how you open this door to this marriage doesn't have to end.
So one of the things I always had admired most about Anne throughout our marriage, and really honestly throughout childhood, this wasn't a journey that was done without conversation with priesthood leaders and spiritual leaders. You know, even when we met, and you know, so always say like, I've met with more bishops in my life than ever before, and you know, or that anyone else ever has, because Anne always took this to the church leaders, always said, I feel this way, help me figure out why and what's wrong with me. And this had been dialogue with church leaders for years.
All throughout, my parents realized something was going on, you know, early teenage years, and they advised me to talk to the bishop about it, and they took me to therapists and counselors. So it was, and some bishops have been better than others, but each one of my bishops, I believe, they want to help, and they want to do what is right, and sometimes that's a hard thing to figure out. And especially in this dealing with transgender and gender identity, where a lot of people don't really know much about.
But it was never in a rebellion thing. It was always done with following, actually, the guidance of the church leaders. They said, go on a mission, it'll get easier. So Anne went on a mission. You know, and then when we were faced with this, Anne had kind of admitted a little bit of what, you know, struggles. And so we talked to the bishop, and, you know, he said, yes, you should get married. It'll go away. You know, that was the thought at the time. So we got married in the temple and did what we thought was right. Then, you know, expand your family. And, you know, and we did everything we thought was what was right based on our church leader's advice. So when we finally came to this point where I was going to stand by and help Anne get to a healthy place before we divorced, we decided to go on a camping trip, just the two of us, and talk about it and figure out how this was going to happen, what we needed and where we were. And we brought notepads and paper, and it was just the two of us, because it was middle of July, and who else camps in Southern Utah in the middle of July but us? Anyways, but we sat in our tent the whole time just making these lists of things that we wanted to change, things that Anne was going to need to make this transition happen. And then we sat there one morning, just the two of us, and we thought, we're making these lists of what we need to divorce. Why haven't we started making a list of what we would need if we chose to stay? And I said, well, I would need you not to be transgender. And Anne said, well, what does that mean? So then it was like, wait a minute, are we putting terms on the reason that we aren't staying, instead of putting true reasons? So we came up with lists of what we really needed. And what we realized was the list didn't have much to do with gender. They really had more to do with relationship issues that every couple faced. And regardless, and I feel this today, regardless of anything that's happened, the Lord knew Anne would face this trial. You know, I just fully believe that. Either the Lord put a male spirit in a male body, but knew that this male spirit was going to be faced with this feeling of feeling female, or the Lord put a female spirit in a male body, but knew that this trial would be faced on this earth. Whatever the reason for that is, the Lord was a part of that. So if I'm involving the Lord in my decision to kind of figure out what this means and pray for a revelation on what to do next, then I'm going to get the right answer because he's the one that put me in this place. We were 15 years married. I know there's a reason the Lord had us married for 15 years before we figured this out, because I know the Lord needed us to be strong enough in our marriage that we wouldn't walk away easily. We had a child together. We had all these things together. This needed to be a fight worth fighting. And at 15 years married, I think we both felt that. And so we went to this camping trip. We had all this hope, and we came home and we actually sat down with some family members, and we lost a little bit of hope. And I went to the temple, to the Salt Lake Temple, and I was praying in the temple once again, saying, okay, I felt good, but now I'm wondering if we should divorce. And so if I've made up my mind to divorce, is that the right answer? And I sat there for hours and hours, and I was overcome with this feeling of stay. Now, that makes me crazy because I want to know what that means. And I don't know. Does it mean I stay for a week, for a month, for a lifetime? Does it mean I stay best friends? Does it mean I stay married? Does it mean stay is so vague and I wanted more answers? But all I knew was I was supposed to stay. And so I came home and I told Anne that, and Anne didn't know what to say. None of our family knew what to say. None of our friends knew what to say. In fact, very few even knew, but I thought, I need to go to my bishop once again. And I did. And thankfully, our bishop was our backdoor neighbor. And I started talking to him. And his response was so loving and kind and just absolutely heartfelt in his response that it gave me the hope I needed to even pursue the option of what stay meant.
Yeah, it's... I didn't want to lose my family. I at the time it felt like I had a choice to make between my family and who I was, and it seemed like an impossible choice. How can I choose? A lot of LGBT members of the church actually talk about this too, between choosing their faith and choosing their who they are. It's how do you choose that? So I think it was just slowly over time, just, you know, learning how to be patient with her, and you know, her being patient with me. Because this is definitely not how either of us imagined our life would, where we would end up, where we would be in life. We never thought this is where we would be. And I want to stress that we still have hard days where we question if we wouldn't be happier, you know, apart. And I hate to say that because I can't really imagine being apart from Bridget. But it's sometimes gets hard, and for both of us. And this, we don't know. We don't know what we're doing.
We don't have answers.
And yeah, it can be hard.
It's pretty tender spirit right now, and thank you for being so honest and sharing your story. And it's a wonderful, crazy. It's a wonderful, difficult, beautiful, all these different words that I want to use are all put into one marriage here. And I think it's an example of, I'm struck with, you know, when we get married, we have these expectations, and then a lot of things don't turn out. I know you've worked with infertility. It took a while to get a daughter here.
Yeah. Shortly after we were married, I had an appendix rupture that was poorly diagnosed. And so we learned pretty quickly that we were going to struggle to get pregnant. So we started trying almost right after we were married. And still to this day, I've never, ever been able to get a pregnancy, even through in vitro. And you know, we've done every fertility treatment under the sun. And that was really hard for me. And it was my struggle that I was going through. Probably consumed me so much that I, because people ask me a lot, like, how did you not know? How did you not see all these signs that were going on through Renan's life? I think I was so consumed by my own trial of infertility that I was oblivious. I admit that, oblivious to the trials that Anne was probably facing. And, you know, when we finally were blessed through the miracle of adoption with our daughter, I felt so much healing because a part of that infertility struggle was able to be healed. But I didn't have any idea at the time that my spouse was still of the same struggle and hurt that had been going on previously. I was so oblivious to it. And only recently have we, in the last 2 or 3 years, started to realize that I've had some healing and now Anne is experiencing a little form of that same healing. It just took us different times to recognize what we needed.
Yeah. That's very helpful for our listeners. And I just am struck with the example you're sharing of just, we get married and we do the best we can and mm-hmm. things don't always turn out. I call it nice tidy box Mormonism, where we kind of have this hope that everything fits in and mm-hmm. the older we get and the more experience we have, we often in our own families or with close friends see things turn out different. And I think you telling your stories helps us understand that that's just part of life.
Oh yeah. I was always the little girl growing up that wanted lots and lots of children. Even people who know me today know I want to be surrounded by children at all times. That was probably the worst thing I could ever have experienced. And I know it was not part of what I thought I would be going through. So it softens my heart a lot to see from my spouse's view growing up, they never wanted to be where we are today either. And, you know, they too had a different plan picked out, but through their own struggle that was out of their control, are kind of faced where we are today. And I think we can relate a lot with that. And because of our trials, my infertility and yours, the gender, and then ours together, I think we can empathize with each other quite well.
Right.
I'm interested in that. There's a beautiful story. The whole thing is beautiful, but the story you told of camping trip and making those lists of how this was going to work separating and then making a list of why not work together mm-hmm. and how gender was not part of that in the sense that there was all these other things that can keep your marriage together outside of, you know, you being transgender mm-hmm. and how that didn't necessarily need to mean the marriage was over. And I look at the great building blocks of successful marriage that often are based on communication, trust, honesty, mm-hmm. helping everybody, the other person, to be better, becoming more than you can become together. And, you know, I'm not a marriage counselor. I only have been in one marriage. And my counseling is with YSA's pre-marriage. So mm-hmm. I'm speaking way out of my expertise. But there is something really incredibly healthy about your marriage and the tools you've developed for great communication, understanding. And you don't both feel the same. And so it's not like you both feel the same and valid, but you do kind of honor the differences within you without trying to pull each of you to your exact way of seeing or feeling. And I think that's mm-hmm. a great foundation principle for lots of things, good marriages, and even the way our congregation should be. Any more thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's probably one of the major reasons why we've actually made it this far.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know. Like you said earlier, we're still in the middle of our story. We don't know how things are going to end up. You know, I try and see things from Bridget's perspective and her point of view, and you know, she has this spouse. She thought she was marrying a man. Mm-hmm. Things turned out very differently. And what that would be like for her, because, of course, course, I'm seeing it from my point of view, my perspective. And yeah, of course, we have different views and different beliefs because we've had different experiences, but we can appreciate the differences in each other and respect where each other are at, if that makes sense.
It does.
We jokingly call it house divided because in almost everything we will be in different viewpoints. I'm incredibly conservative. Anne is more liberal. I'm, of course, the Republican. Anne's the Democrat. And I typically will take a path, and it seems like almost to spite me, Anne will take the other path in most cases. But I know why they say, you know, marriages that start really young can be beautiful and can be more difficult. They're beautiful because you grow together, but they're also difficult because you can grow apart. And I think a lot of times when people are still growing, you know, we got married at 21, 22, and then this huge phase of growth happened in each of us. And instead of finding reasons that we were so different, we couldn't make it work, it was more a matter of, yeah, we might have a different viewpoint on this, but we respect each other's differences and we can find kind of common ground in the middle of everything, whether it is, you know, Republican or Democrat, we can find the middle grounds that are in the center, or we choose just not to talk about certain things. Mm, yeah. That happens okay. A lot too.
There are that too. We're not going to make any progress. So
yeah.
And okay.
Let's
great.
Just respect that we both have very different feelings and mm-hmm.
yeah.
thoughts.
Part of your story is you stepping away from the church, Anne, and you were kind of referred to when Anne took off her garments.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at some point you felt, could I make the church work? And you started to come to church. And that's sort of been complicated in itself. But tell us a little bit about that.
Well, in the beginning of my transition, Bridget, you know, I knew she wanted me to come back to church. I think I mentioned just in talking with my family, you know, about this, who knows, someday I might come back to church as myself. And so Bridget, hopefully our audience is familiar with Mormons Building Bridges. It's
a great organization.
Great organization. Erica Munson and Kendall Wilcox. And they, on their website, they had a program called Sit With Me Sunday. And it was where people could put their names on a list and they would be a safe person if a LGBT person wanted to go to church with someone. They could reach out to anyone on this list to go to church with. And so Bridget kind of sent that to me one day and like, hey, you know, why don't you try going to church as you? And I thought, wow, is that, will I be struck down? Like, will God strike me down when I walk in the doors? What's that going to be like? So I was a little intrigued, like, And so I did. I found there was a Grayson Moore reached out and said he was a safe person to go with. And they actually live probably a couple miles from our house. And so I went with him to his young single adult ward. And the experience that I had was amazing. I had never felt the way I had at church than I did that day. And it felt like I was home. It felt like all the distractions of feelings of my gender dysphoria, which is what we call the feeling of the mismatch, that was all gone. And for that hour of sacrament meeting, it was just, I was able to focus on the Spirit and truly be present for why we go to church in the first place. And so that was wonderful. And that's kind of how I came back, I guess you could say, you know, when I started to transition, which is odd.
And my belief was that God doesn't require special uniform or special apparel to attend church. I grew up my childhood years in Saudi Arabia and in an area where there were no church buildings. We met in our homes, and people even either, you know, had nothing to afford church clothes, or there was one family where he had been born and raised Muslim before he converted in a different country. But inside Saudi Arabia, that meant he was never allowed to attend a Mormon church gathering. And so he would come purposely in non-church clothes to not draw attention when he came to our home. And so for me, there was this whole opinion of church clothes don't matter. Apparel doesn't matter. If you're here for the right reasons, that's what the Lord is looking for. So when I approached Anne about it, I basically said, you know, I could see the hurt that Anne was carrying about the relationship with the Lord. And I just kept saying, it's going to be better for you to go to church and not worry about anything you're wearing, but go for the reason of trying to resolve the hurt you've experienced and this anger that you have towards the Lord, feeling like you didn't belong. And so I said, go with whatever you want. I don't care if you go in a, you know, flip-flops and beach suit, like just go to church, just walk in the building, sit in the back, sit in the front, where sit in the hallway, just go. Because I think being in that building was going to be such an experience of I can be here that we hadn't had for a long time. I didn't expect it to have the effect it did, but I so grateful that it did. And after that, you were able to attend with Grayson's mom, Nika in a ward by us. And I'm going to admit that we did that for so long because I was afraid. I was afraid for you to attend church with me.
Our home ward,
because I was afraid that people would know. And I was afraid that people would find out. And I was...
It's honest.
I had just been called into the primary presidency, and I was really scared of all those children that I served, that they would have questions, or they would get confused, or they would just be affected by this. And I felt so much responsibility that when Anne was now going to church and I could see all these beautiful blessings coming our way just by Anne having the Lord back, and I still wasn't ready for Anne to come to church with us for quite some time. It took me about 6 months. And I actually don't think it was my choice. I think Anne one day said, I'm going whether you want me to or not. And I said, okay, you can come, but you have to sit way in the back, afar from me, because I always sit in the front on the side. They'll, you know, that's where I go. So you sit in the very, very back. And at this time, we had released our stories through an essay program, through the Journeys of Faith program. So our neighborhood sort of knew, they just had never seen it. So Anne sat in the very back corner and I was in the very front, and I felt okay. And afterwards, Anne came a little late and left a little early. So no one was going to say anything and no one was going to notice. And I got home and our next door neighbor sent me a text and said, is everything okay? I noticed Anne finally was at church, but you were sitting apart. Are you guys okay? And I realized that people were more concerned that we were struggling in our marriage than seeing Anne as trans and seeing Anne there in a dress. And that's when I finally said, I need to start changing how I view this. I need to come to grips with the fact that if my spouse is able to come into the church building, why in the world would they not sit next to me? And that was a change I had to make. But for so long, my conservative nature was afraid.
That's really honest and very helpful to our listeners. So tell us about the first week you sat together.
Oh, my gosh. I was so stressed.
Did you change where you were sitting? Did you compromise?
I actually think that we got there a little late because I think Anne had a little bit of a panic attack outside, and I was not going to push to get there on time. We were a little late, thankfully, and I think we sat in the middle and just hoped no one saw us. I didn't dare turn around. No one will know it's me by the back of my head. And I think you jetted out still a little early. But yeah, people stopped you in the hallway. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, yeah. Our ward is amazing. And there's, ever since I came back to church at our ward, there's always been a handful of people who will come up and tell me how glad they are to see me there. How
does that make you feel, Anne, when a ward member says that to you?
It makes me feel like I have a place in the Lord's kingdom, and I have a place at church, and that I belong there. It's huge when a member comes and tells me how much they love seeing me at church. I don't think they realize quite the impact that it has on me.
Do your ward members call you Anne?
Some do
and some don't.
Some do and some don't, and that's okay. I'm just happy that they're talking to me, and that I'm happy that they're treating me as if, I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It was a little awkward for me the first time that people came up and started recognizing Anne's attendance, but I saw the healing that it was providing Anne, and I could see how it took this really anxious situation and just turned it into a really beautiful opportunity for Anne to feel welcomed. And so then it became a point where I too felt peace by people coming up and welcoming Anne, because I felt like if they accept my spouse, that's the hard part of, my story. And if they're going to accept my spouse, then they accept me. And it was actually became a point where even for my daughter, she'll now say, oh, so-and-so came up and asked me where you were. I mean, she gets so excited that people would want to see us there and would welcome us at church. So it has a healing throughout the entire family. Now my parents actually also live with us in the basement of my home. And, even for them, they will comment on it now about our ward and some of the, people that will ask questions or, ask where we were and how they feel about that. And so, it's really become something that blesses the entire family when people just reach out, and even a smile or a hug or a recognition of somebody's attendance or lack thereof is really nice.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. Everything that your ward members are doing are within the doctrine of our church. Mm-hmm. Everything that Christ taught would tell me that when I see you at church, Anne, I should go up and thank you for being here and be grateful you're here and look for the gifts and contributions you can make to help the body of Christ come closer.
Yeah.
So... this is such a unique story. I'm just, I'm sure our listeners are just enjoying it. Go ahead, Bridget.
I was just going to say, and also another thing that we've been really blessed, I mean, a lot of our church members have also asked us how they can learn more about anything within the LGBT community. So we've had our backdoor neighbor came to one of our family home evenings, the transgender family home evenings. We have my primary president when I was serving, she came to the North Star Conference. We've had so many of our ward members attend events or participate in things just because they truly want to gain a better understanding. And that's really neat too, for somebody to say, hey, you have a difference than I, and I don't understand what you're going through, but could I understand, and could we either talk about it, or is there somewhere or someone else I could, also involve so I understand more experiences in this journey? It's really been nice.
Yes. Yeah, I love it when people genuinely want to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our prior listeners have heard my kind of mantra is that I try not to fall in the trap of unearned opinions. Mm-hmm. And so as I stepped into the space, I said, I didn't know the difference between cisgender and transgender. I Googled cisgender about 2 years ago.
Did you?
To just, what is this term? And obviously then some more, but I thought I better not, as a cisgender male, start developing opinions about my transgender friends without first meeting my transgender mm-hmm. friends. I almost think of the logic of coming to terms with the Book of Mormon of Truth is study out in your mind real intent. And some of those stages to me, coming to terms, gaining a testimony of the Book of Mormon, which I have, apply to learning about my transgender friends. I have to hear their stories. I have to mm-hmm. either sit with them or I have to hear their stories as part of the process to understand what's going on here. I can't just surround myself with cisgender people as we try to talk about transgender people. It's a pretty simple, but it's an incredibly powerful. So I would guess if we had your ward members here, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them would say, one of the gifts that Bridget and Ann have brought into our lives is great understanding about LGBTQ people and how that's helped us. The principles there, even if we don't have LGBTQ people in our life, have helped us to extend our circle and create more understanding and bridge building and all the things that Christ taught firsthand and during his ministry. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Growing up, I kind of imagine Christ more as a more in the Old Testament Jehovah. And, you know, as an adult, I am trying to have a better relationship with him as the New Testament. And, one of the things I've kind of the question, you know, am I welcome at church? If Christ returned today, would I feel worthy to approach him? And the answer I've come to is yes. Of course he loves me. Of course he loves me. There was years and years of I would answer that question differently. Mm-hmm. But today I can say that I know my Savior loves me.
And this coming from somebody that I think it was probably about our 12 or 13 year mark, we were at a therapist session and I was really angry that Anne wasn't going to church with me and my daughter every Sunday because I never wanted to be that single woman doing this. And we were in a therapist session and the therapist asked Anne, well, do you want Bridget to go to church? And Anne said, yes. And the therapist said, do you want Bridget to take Alyssa, your daughter? And Anne said, yes, of course. And he said, why? And Anne said, because I believe. I know that the Lord is there. I have this firm testimony and the Lord wants them there. And he loves them and he wants them there. And the therapist, of course, asked the next question, why don't you feel you need to go? And I always use this because it breaks my heart. But Anne, as straight-faced as could be, looked back at the therapist and said, because he doesn't love me. And I couldn't imagine that. I've been a primary teacher so long, and the core foundation of our church and every doctrine it entails is that we are all children of God and he loves you. So how could somebody grow up not believing this? And that really floored me. So that tells you how much healing has come just from being able to put gender aside and focus on who you are and build a relationship with the Lord for that versus feeling like he set you on this earth broken and with some curse that you are shunned to hell.
Oh, I definitely thought it was a curse.
Yeah.
I must have, been one of the bad ones in the pre-existence.
You barely made the cut.
Yeah.
I mean, that's truly what was believed.
I must have,
You were the
I must
first
have done
percent
something
that
really bad in the, So
this is really helpful. And I think shame is a term that I think doesn't belong in anybody. I think shame is I am bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think God wants anybody to look at themselves and think they're bad.
Right.
And all of us are capable of bad behavior, but it doesn't mean that we're a bad person. We're a good person. Mm-hmm. I guess there's some exceptions to that perhaps in our history of our world, but I just think God has created everybody the way they're intended to be created. We shouldn't look at our gender identity or sexual orientation as a mistake. It doesn't take agency off the table. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take the plan of salvation off the table. But I do believe, as I've met with so many transgender and other people on the spectrum, that I believe that everybody's created as they want to be created. And we have a perfect God, and we don't quite understand his complete plan. But I don't think he's up there saying, oh my gosh, what went wrong? I've got gay children. I've got trans children. I think it's our job to sort of say what's going on here as part of a bigger plan that we don't quite understand. And because we quite don't understand, the best thing we can do is what members of your congregation have done when they see you there. Just say, we love you. We're glad you're here. And I can do that as a disciple of Christ, and you're doing a great job of that in your marriage. I love this quote from Brené Brown. You use the term "and belonging." That term has come up several times, and you probably are familiar with this quote, but I love this. Fitting in is about assessing a situation and becoming who you need to be in order to be accepted. Belonging, on the other hand, doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are.
I love that quote.
And so I think fitting in is we all fit in a church in a certain mold with a certain cultural expectation, a certain history in the church, a certain kind of testimony. And I call that kind of small Mormonism, where that there's a group that meets all those criteria and they fit in and they're all. But I think the gospel of Jesus Christ and what Christ taught in his ministry is belonging. And we all come with our beautiful differences. It's the harmony of Elder Holland's choir. It's not just the altos that fit in. Right. Everybody fits, everybody belongs based on who they are. As we all, hopefully in a Mormon congregation, are just trying to come under Christ and using the tools that are available in the doctrine of our church and our teaching, our covenants to come under Christ. But we give permission for people to belong the way that they feel they need to belong. And that's why your story, I think, is so helpful for our listeners. I want to talk about North Star and affirmation. Because as Bridget is the chair of the board, I think is the right title for North Star. You were elected this summer. This podcast has been recorded in late summer of 2018. And you're both connected. So you're connected with North Star, and I think both of you are both connected in some respect to Mormons Building Bridges to Affirmation and North Star, and you're a great voice to our listeners of the role of these different organizations, how some work better for others than others. So let's start with you, Bridget, about North Star and your role with North Star.
Well, when this all kind of came forward, as you can imagine, online you can find a lot of resources to kind of explain transgender. You can get all these health resources and all of that. I was looking for what it was like to be transgender and Mormon. And I found a few sites about Christian transgender, but I really wanted to know what it was like to be Mormon. And I was struggling, and I found one site, but it was a very toxic site. It was really, I jokingly say it should be named Anti-Mormons, but it was transgender Mormons. And I was voicing on there why everyone was so angry with the church. So of course they didn't agree with me, but one voice came forward and said, hey, if you really want to meet other transgender Mormons, there's a group called North Star that they had been involved with, this person, Karen Penman, who I adore. They don't have a lot of information about transgender individuals and membership of the church because it's so new and undiscussed, but there are people that you could connect with that could be really great, and they have a spouses group. And so I immediately, you know, started researching North Star, and we reached out and we joined the group. And for me, it was exactly what I needed at that time.
And just define North Star for our listeners. What would you say North Star's mission statement is?
So North Star is an organization created to bring people under the LGBTQ spectrum who want to live in harmony with the church teachings and church doctrines, providing community and basically support for those individuals. We don't do a lot of research. There's groups that do that, advocacy. We don't do any of that. We are focused on building relationships with the Lord. So, you know, people that are gay that maybe are choosing a mixed orientation marriage or celibacy, the church can tell you that's the path recommended, but there aren't a lot of resources released by the church of how in the heck do you do that? So North Star just said, you know what? We'll bring you together. You guys individually can share and connect over that, but we're going to help you focus back on the relationship with the Lord, because that's what we have clear outline from the church on how to do. So I went to North Star because that's exactly what I needed. My faith had been rocked through this. How could the Lord put somebody on this earth and they're mind doesn't match their body. And I've been told that bodies are always perfect. How is this possible? And I really was questioning everything. I think I was questioning almost exactly what an average person who hears trans for the first time. I mean, there was none of me getting on board happy. And, you know, I immediately understood what was going on at the time. I still today have trials of faith and how this all plays out, what it all means. This was really, really hard for me. So I needed somebody that could take away my fear that I didn't belong and help me focus back on really what was important, which was my relationship with the Lord, especially at that time, because I was still unsure that I was going to be married through this. I thought, especially if I get divorced, I really want to have a strong testimony of the Lord if I'm going to do that, because I'm going to be alone. And once I found North Star, there was just no turning back for me. It was exactly what I needed. I needed those faith resources. I needed the sense. And North Star provides community for LGBTQ members, but they also do a lot for allies and community members. But the new stretch we've been focused on is really church leaders, making sure that when that person comes into your church office for the first time to admit they're gay or they're transgender or they're lesbian, that your shocked reaction, as I'm sure it would initially be, is more a response of, how can I help you? How can I understand? Tell me your story. Tell me what you're going through. And providing more connections for those church leaders with other more experienced church leaders who may have faced this already. So we have this Ministering Angels program that we're really trying to get church leaders connected with other church leaders, making sure they're getting good faith-based and doctrine-based connections with each other. So that's where great. I found North Star. Now, like we said earlier, house divided, my spouse was at a very rocky place with the Lord. And so when I said I'd had this great experience with North Star, my spouse said, well, that's great for you, but I don't know where I am with church stuff. Right now, I want to just be okay with myself and be around people who know how hard it is to be a member of the church and also belong in the LGBT community.
And when you mentioned earlier about that group that we found, transgender Mormon wise, mm-hmm. And you mentioned there was a lot of angry people, mm-hmm. angry at the church, and I don't blame them.
Mm-mm.
I was one of those people. I was extremely angry. I think my anger was more focused towards the Lord and God. But I think most LGBT members of church kind of experiences those emotions at different times. A range of emotions from anger to, you know, sadness. And yeah, it goes back to the belonging that we were talking about earlier.
I've learned to honor anger. I remember in my singles ward bishop days, I had no sort of framework what to do with angry members. Mm-hmm. Well, if I validate their anger, is that somehow driving a wedge between them and the church or between God? And I'm not clinically trained, but gradually I just came to terms that I should honor people's anger, even though I don't feel that way.
Right.
How could I not allow someone to feel the way they feel and validate how they feel? And I felt honoring their anger and validating it, even if it was towards the church that I love and support. Mm-hmm. I wasn't selling out the church to do that. I was just honoring how someone felt, and I felt I could heal them and help them more. I think anger is a secondary emotion to pain, and learn to justify pain. So I've always felt that agency sort of kicks in at some point when you've had anger for a period of time. What are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm. And I think you almost can't achieve healing without going through a phase of anger. Some more outward, some more inward.
That's interesting.
But I definitely have gone through phases of anger for sure. So I don't question anyone else's need to express that and feel that and maybe even stay there for a long period of time. My spouse definitely stayed there, and still we each have moments where we are back in that place. But
definitely. Yeah.
I think you wanted to find an organization that allowed you to feel that way and you could express it and you still felt like you belonged regardless.
Yeah, so talk about affirmation.
So affirmation is an organization that wants to support individuals wherever they're at on their journey, wherever they're at on their path, whether that's in the church, whether it's out of the church, somewhere in between, mixed orientation marriage, same gender marriage, however you're choosing to deal with your attractions or gender identity, affirmation wants to support you and what you feel is right.
Absolutely.
For your life and your path.
And is there a spiritual component to affirmation?
There is. Affirmation is a little bit trickier because it is such a big tent, and there are people who have kind of moved, no longer consider themselves spiritual or religious, but they do. There is a community that they want, that they desire to be a part of, that something LDS or former LDS. So there's a spiritual part. There's a part that affirmation wants to be for those people who have moved beyond. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a little trickier. How would you say it, Bridget?
I would say it's all encompassing. It doesn't exclude anyone. It wants everyone to find a place.
Right.
And the shared connection are two things. One, we all either experience or empathize or an ally of the LGBT community, but we also all know that being a member of the church or even a post or pre-member of the church brings some unique challenges to that story.
It does.
So I think they want to allow a platform and a connection for everyone there, which is a beautiful thing. And there's a lot of people that go to both and support both because they do fit in both. There's some people that go back and forth wherever their journey might be. And there's some people that, you know, stay solely in affirmation because North Star is too conservative for them, or North Star individuals who stay there because affirmation may be too affirming. So
liberal.
Yeah.
Liberal.
And I think that ability to find a place for absolutely everybody, no one would feel alone, no one would feel isolated, is what is so great. And we both have found so much peace and healing in the organizations that we're not going to walk away from these organizations that we love. So yes, I'm involved in North Star. My spouse is very, very involved in affirmation and loves their organization.
They're very different. Their missions are very different, but they both do amazing work. Mm-hmm.
It's really wonderful. Bridget, would you be involved in North Star without Anne? Would you be connected?
I almost too quickly said, heck no. I began this conversation by saying, I am extremely conservative. I was the one who wanted the white picket fence.
So here you are, the North Star executive.
I know.
Or the chair of the board.
But I didn't want any of this, and I'm ashamed at that.
Are you glad you're involved with North Star?
I'm so glad. I have grown so much through this experience. I have met some of the most incredible people, the most talented, the most just tender-hearted spiritual people in my life within the organization. I have cried with so many members. I have had members reach out to me on my darkest days. I have been so blessed by it. I just can't even imagine being where I am today if North Star didn't exist, and so I'm grateful for that. I know Anne feels exactly the way with affirmation. The last organization you mentioned, I wanted to just briefly talk about, which was Mormons Building Bridges. Mormons Building Bridges really is more of an organization for the community, for church members and everybody, that there isn't an us and them. It is, we're all Mormon and we're all here to connect and build bridges. And so they do some great things. The hug a Mormon booth where I got hugged by a Mormon. And
they walk every year in the Pride Parade,
yeah,
which is their thing. And I love their signs. Yeah. God loves everyone.
And their Sit With Me Sunday program.
Yes.
Everything is just
program.
All yes. about making sure that we're embracing everybody. And I wish there was an organization like that for every sort of variation of life. You know, we need one of those for every difference we all experience,
right?
Because none of us should be looking for those differences. We all should be just embracing everybody regardless. And so we're lucky to live at a time when there are such great organizations for support.
So we're coming to the end. I'd love you both to give advice to parents that have LGBTQ kids. And I realize that just some general principles of advice. Start with you, Anne.
Oh, wow.
orgs? You'll be good at this question.
As a parent, I've tried to imagine, you know, how if our daughter, you know, ever comes out and, you know, tells us, I'd like to think I'd be a little more equipped than the average parent. But I would think someone in the church and whose child comes out to them as LGBTQ plus, I would think they would probably feel a little scared, unsure of how to handle things. And I want to say that's probably perfectly normal, natural that they would feel these things. They don't have to have the answers. Just sit and listen to your child. Ask your child questions about how long they've felt this way, how they think they might want to approach, ask them to kind of teach you what terms to use, what you know, language, and then maybe seek out some of these amazing organizations that can provide more resources on how to help your child.
It's good. It's great.
I think I'm going to back up a little bit and not even and start prior to the point when your child comes forward to you. I think as members of the church, all of us can do something today before that child comes to us. And listening in one of your recent podcasts, you had Susie and Paul Augustine, and yeah. I loved how she said, I just felt so much of a need to learn and understand because I was so sure one of my kids would come forward as gay. But when they didn't, I realized all I had done was educate my children to the point where they could now be a love and a support for somebody else. And so I think that today we can all try to understand our LGBTQ members, our brothers and sisters in our ward, in our community, wherever they may be in their testimony, or maybe if they aren't even members of the church. I think hearing stories and reaching out and growing compassion will help you. I can say for my own child, when we were trying to decide when to tell her, I was convinced it would never happen and was convinced it would happen sooner than later. But we had started going to events that the LGBT community would be at, and starting with our amazing friends, Nika Allgood and David Moore, they host a Transgiving, which is a Thanksgiving for transgender community who may not have one of their own, especially in their families who are often not accepting of them. So at Transgiving, we had taken my daughter and she had met these awesome kids that she really connected with. And then we had gone to family home evenings. So she had all these positive experiences within the LGBT community, so that when we then broke down and felt it was right to tell her about her dad, she wasn't afraid of what that meant as far as being part of the LGBT community. The only fear she had was really that we were telling her we were going to get divorced, because we had thought that's too what was going to be the outcome. So we were able to talk her through that, but she, in a sense, almost had this, it's okay. It's okay that you're part of the LGBT community, because those are my friends and those are the people that she knows. And
no fear.
They were
no
awesome
fear.
People.
No us versus them.
And
no
now,
demonizing of that group.
We jokingly say she's probably one of the most, even though she's so timid and shy and she's got anxiety and social anxiety, she's the little kid in the corner. She will become the fiercest little ally of somebody who's being bullied, and especially for somebody who might be gay or a lesbian being bullied. She is just so soft-hearted to the community. And I think it's
That's
because
beautiful.
It developed long before we told her our story. Mm-hmm. So I think all of us can do something today. And I think as well, if you're a parent who has a child come forward and they've seen you be a beacon of light and a beacon of hope and love, they're going to know that you would do the same for them. If they've seen you be very judgmental or say hurtful things about the gay community or the trans community or whatever, they're going to be terrified to tell you, and they're going to fear that that's the reaction you'll give them. So I think setting the example ahead of time is going to go a long way.
Well, that's really powerful. And I remember during my YSA bishop assignment the last year, as I started to connect on this issue, I started to just say some kind things on social media about LGBTQ on Twitter and Facebook. And mm-hmm. I was kind of a social media bishop because mm-hmm. of my teenage kids. And I was kind of stunned what happened. It was the straight kids that had really deep closeted issues that mm-hmm. said, okay, I can talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a few people sort of open up more, and I had a lot of the inactive kids that were on my social media mm-hmm. say, okay, I can talk to this guy. And so I think the principles you're teaching, when you're so kind to people on the margins, that you may have a kid later on that may not come out as gay, but know they can talk to you about anything.
Yeah.
And it may be anxiety, it may be this challenge or this concern, and they know you're safe as a mm-hmm. parent. You're not compromising your doctrine or your beliefs mm-hmm. to be kind. It is our doctrine.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love what you're teaching, and I look at your daughter, and I look at these younger people in our church, in our world, and they're wired to kind of, you know, be kinder to people on the margins. They don't like the us versus them. They don't like mm-hmm. sort of me having to stand on my religious beliefs. I can just stand on my own merits for what I believe. I don't have to sort of take on another religion.
Yeah. And I think we had a few experiences where we had a next door neighbor situation where it was really strained. We didn't get along. We'd had some things happen in the past. And when we released our story, this same neighbor showed up at our house pouring tears. And he came to Ryan and he said, I had no idea. And I empathize so much with you because I struggle with this. And wow. He just absolutely opened up. Now our struggles were not anywhere alike, but the idea that it made him feel comfortable enough
safe to
connect. And that's just neighbor to neighbor. But I think the same could go for if a bishop really made the ward feel safe, being able to talk about some of these things, how much easier would it be for them for the next person to talk to that bishop? I think it could be really great there too.
Yeah. So great principles. Any last closing comments, Anne and then Bridget?
Well, in our church, we talk a lot about obeying the commandments, and there's the two great commandments, love God and love your neighbor. I think for most of us, it's easy to love someone who is the same as us, mm-hmm. with someone who we have similar interests and, you get along with. It's easy to love that person. It's scary to try and love someone who is completely different from you, and can be uncomfortable. But I think that's what the Lord Savior would want us to do. And it's hard, but the Savior didn't ask us always to do easy stuff. So it's something that I think all of us need to work on, myself included. I struggle with it sometimes and think it might be easier if I just surrounded myself with people like me. But yeah.
So thoughtful.
Anyways, that's my
thank sense. You, Anne.
Thanks, Richard, for having us on here.
I think for me, it would be to realize that this is an impact that it has on so many. My spouse is transgender, yes, but it impacts me, my daughter, my family, my community. And be aware of that and be sensitive to that. We've had a few people that have turned away our daughter to play with their child, or have judged me because of our family dynamics. And I just beg everyone to realize that only makes it harder for us versus making it easier for us to face our trial. And so I would just ask everyone to be mindful and cautious of every member of a family. Reach out, embrace the LGBTQ member. Reach out, embrace their parents, embrace their children, embrace, anyone that's connected with them, and really show an expression of love and ask. Don't just stop at one question either. Ask if they could come to your home and have dinner with you. Ask if their children can play with your child. Those things go a tremendous way. And I am so thankful for the support that we have received. But I also have to sit here and tell you that majority of the LGBT community does not receive that. Mm-hmm. And I just fall to pieces to think about the experiences they may have, and especially if they're younger. So please, please reach out to anyone you can.
Thank you, Anne and Bridget. It's grateful to have you two women in our home today. And it's interesting, as I'm looking at you two, I'm looking behind you, and there's a picture of Carl Bloch's Pool of Bethesda painting with Christ. And I think all those people that society said were not worthy, and they're kind of manifest in this artwork by physical limitations. I look at that and I think of all the people that society says aren't worthy of my company or I shouldn't mm-hmm. be with. And Christ is looking for the most marginalized, this man that's covered himself. He's at the Pool of Bethesda and so, you know, worried about himself that he's covered himself. And Christ is opening up that covering over him, and his hand is pointing at him. It's drawing our picture, our eyes to the most marginalized. So I love what you two have just taught, and I love what Christ teaches. And to me, it's very, very consistent with our doctrine and with the teachings of Christ and what we need to do better as Mormons and Mormon congregations. So thank you for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.
Thank you.